This is The Rundown. I'm Hari Srinivasan. Frontline has a new special on called Law and Disorder. It is airing on PBS stations around the country. We're joined now by A.C. Thompson, a reporter from ProPublica, who's central to the investigation that's airing. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So let's talk a little bit about this film, this hour-long special that Frontline has now. It really is not just taking a look at one particular incident of, shall we say, excessive force by police, but really a string of them. What's the sort of larger pattern that you discovered?
In the week after Hurricane Katrina struck, police officers shot 11 civilians. And what we did is we looked at those cases. We looked at each of those shootings and looked to see what was going on. And what we found was a pattern of questionable practices. We found people who were shot in the back. We found people who supposedly had weapons, but it turned out they didn't. And what we also found were cases where officers allegedly covered up the misdeeds of their fellow officers in these shootings.
In the immediate aftermath of the storm, of course, it was such a chaotic and tumultuous scene, but was there a culture in the police department that allowed this to happen? Where did that culture come from?
There's two parts to that question, and one is that you need to understand that the New Orleans Police Department has a 30-year history of deep, deep cellular-level problems. We're talking about a department where officers have been sent to death row for calling in hits on citizens who complained against them, a department where officers have gone and robbed banks, a department where officers have tortured people. I mean, this is very, very problem-heavy department. In 2005, what we were looking at was, one, a complete breakdown of the command structure, that communications failed. And so communication became a thing that happened by word of mouth, and the normal chain of command basically vanished. As well, officers were in this situation where they were hearing reports, they were hearing rumors about how bad it was, about how crazy it was, and they were responding in part to these rumors, many of which turned out to be bogus.
Well, one of those is whether or not there was martial law on the ground. I mean, I remember not just from reporting there, but there were quite a few television outlets, big mainstream media, that echoed Mayor Nagin's call for martial law.
Right. So Mayor Nagin goes on the radio and he says, I've already called for martial law in the city of New Orleans. Well, what does that mean, and what is the message that that put out to officers? I think there was a ton of confusion. The truth is, he didn't actually invoke martial law, and he couldn't under Louisiana law. But officers probably got the sense that there's martial law. The rules have changed. We're going to do things differently. And I think that that sown a lot of confusion for people at that time.
We were dealing with a police force that was completely inundated with lack of resources, and it was clear that we were having some civil societal breakdown.
Tension mixed with temptation on Tuesday as those trapped in a city of rising water took survival into their own hands.
Quickly, news reports were saturated with a lasting image of Katrina, the looter.
Looting in New Orleans. Shots have been fired.
Downtown New Orleans became a looter's free-for-all.
They represent a frightening breakdown of law and order.
But early media reports were exaggerated.
There was chaos on Canal Street for a period of time. That was a fact. But rumors were all over the place.
With gangs of men armed with stolen weapons roaming the streets and firing at police, there may be shootouts soon enough.
Stories now known to be untrue were told by the highest-ranking NOPD officers.
A sniper started shooting at my SWAT team in a fire truck. Then he started shooting at me in a helicopter.
And then repeated across the news.
How do you explain snipers firing on a medevac helicopter trying to get the sick to safety?
Rumors were running amok, and I shouldn't have basically given it any credibility by repeating what was told to me. If I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't.
You also make a point to really delve into some of these individual cases. The one that really sticks out and you sort of started the documentary with was the case of Mr. Glover, whose body was found torched in a car just two blocks or so from a police station.
Right. So I've been reporting on Henry Glover's death since 2007. And when I first came across it, I thought it was just this crazy, weird story. And it starts off with, there's a citizen, he makes a complaint to a police accountability group. He says, hey, this whole thing happened. I found a man who'd been shot just after the storm. I tried to rescue him. I took him to the police for help. The police didn't give us help. Instead, they physically assaulted me and my companions. They let the man bleed to death, and then they burnt his body up and dumped it behind the police station.
Harry Glover was in the middle of the street, and his brother Ed was standing over him. And he's talking about he needed medical attention for his brother. So I got out the car, touched his neck, and see he had, still had a pulse.
Tanner reaching down, feeling, he said, you have a pulse. So I grabbed him, and we fell back into the car like this. My mission is to get him to the hospital or somebody who can help him.
But Will Tanner thought the hospital was too far. He didn't think Glover would make it. Instead, Tanner drove a mile to Haven's Elementary School.
I knew at Haven's School had medical attention. Police was camped out there.
In the days after Katrina, the NOPD SWAT team had turned this school into an armed encampment.
When we got there, I thought that they was going to help us. But the first thing they did was put us in handcuffs. And I'm, why? We coming for help. So I made the statement because y'all not helping my brother. Whoever killed him, I'm going to kill them. Out of anger, you know, my brother, I'm seeing my brother in that, you know, in that way. So that's why I said, and that's when the beating came.
And when I first heard this, I thought it was crazy. I thought it was, you know, just some wild, wild tale. But then I got Henry Glover's autopsy and found out, yeah, there was a guy named Henry Glover. And yeah, he had been burnt up, and started piecing it together. And over the last 3 years, what we found in our reporting and now in the federal indictments is the federal prosecutors are saying Henry Glover was shot to death by a man named David Warren, who was a police officer. He did try to get help from other police officers. Those police officers did physically attack his companions. They then burnt up his body and dumped it behind the police station. And other officers conspired to cover this all up.
All right, A.C. Thompson from ProPublica. You can see more of his reporting on the Frontline special Law and Disorder that's airing on several PBS stations all over the country. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
This is The Rundown. I'm Hari Srinivasan. Stay with us.